Blog Talk Radio. driving rubber. Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to Thursday Night Special, Breaking the Curse. My name is Jan Gazinski. I'm over here riding shotgun with my brother Hest. He'll be on shortly. Right now, let's just talk about exactly what the show is going to be about tonight. Talking about selfishness, self-centeredness. What do you know? How is it a curse? How do we break that curse? You know, a little bit more about Pops first, though. I want to welcome everybody to Pops Movement. Like I said, today is Thursday Night Special, Breaking the Curse, and we would like to welcome everyone appropriately as we strive to remember that this is a family-based program. That means no cursing, no disrespect, no being yourself. This is a family-based program, therefore you should always be yourself. That's how we are with our family, so I just want to make sure everybody understands that aspect of it. We also would like to remind everyone that Pops Movement is always inclusive and never exclusive. We want everybody to feel comfortable to speak freely from their hearts, but please keep in mind that we have children and seniors here live at Pops Movement, which means we don't follow any race, creed, religion, nothing that would separate us or segregate us in any way, shape, or form. As a family, we have to be accepting of all our, positives, negatives, all our different views and opinions of this world and how it is to be lived. This is how you, first off, break the curse of segregation and bring unity amongst your people. With that being said, this is a six-step to peace program, meaning we're about organizing and a program within our individual selves that brings peace to ourselves and to our communities. The six steps to peace are as following. Step one, forming a bond. Forming a bond requires us to first bond with ourselves to discover our true identity, and then forming a bond with someone else by bringing value to their lives without expecting anything in return. We also call that altruism. Step two, identify the problems. What are problems that we're facing in our communities today? Addiction, relationships, our spiritual walks, just life in general, whether it's work-related, personal-related, athletics-related, whatever it may be. We're all facing some sort of problems, but once we have developed a bond, we can work on them together. And that's the key. We listen to form that bond with you. Step three is expressing the importance of unity. We know that our people... the people are hard to trust, and we need someone that we can trust that does not want to take hurt or make fun of us in any way, shape, or form. They just want to walk through our struggles that we may be facing together. And that's the importance of the unity aspect of Pops Movement, because once we've developed that bond and addressed some problems, I'm going to hold you by the hand, and we're going to do this together. It's in the book of AA, it's a family thing. They talk about coming together and fighting, our problems together. That's what a sponsor is for. So when you feel like relapsing, they're right there with you. That's the importance of unity, because when I feel like falling, you're going to pick me right back up or keep me up. Unity is our greatest asset. And here at Pops Movement, love, selflessness is what has kept these airwaves open. And with our ability to show our people, we just want to give what we have learned in our walk of life and testimony. Step four, get into the solution. Now, what is required to get into the solution? How do we build together to get ourselves out of the predicaments we are in? What do we know or what do we need to learn? Until we figure out how to do this together and then get into those solutions together, we can't really strategize, which is step five. Strategizing is a plan, a game plan, a step-by-step process that we have created that's going to take us to wherever it is that we're striving to get to. And it's imperative to have a strategy in anything that we do. Like, what corporation doesn't have a strategy in how they're going to execute a certain, move that they're trying to make for the benefit of the company? Well, we in our individual lives have to think the same way. We have to strategize and then execute to deliver what it is we're striving to accomplish, whether it's, our home living, our relationships, our job environment, like I had stated, whether it's just, building up our community. It takes step by step, and it takes responsibility to get to that point, which is step six. Taking responsibility, because alone, We can do only so much as a team. We can do a lot, but it takes individuals who are willing to take responsibility for the people who are not willing to take responsibility. Now, what is going to be your role or position once you have taken responsibility? How are you going to execute that individual responsibility as well as, you know, someone else's responsibility on their behalf? You have to strategize these things, which is why step five is so important to bring on step six. Are you going to execute or are you just going to leave it as it is? You know, and to break the curse, we must utilize step six because it's the journey that requires our full commitment and attention. It's, you know, it's the process of success. And with that being stated, that's kind of what POPS Movement is all about. That's what we're striving to do. We're trying to bring changes within the community, and we have a six-step process to do it. So whether or not you're on board or, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, we have a way to get it done. We want to, you to be a part of it. So, you know, with that being said, I want to get the show on and popping, and I'm going to bring my brother Heston. I see he's just walked into the studio trying to let me know that, hey, bro, look at me. I'm here. What's going on, brother? How you feeling tonight?
Peace and blessings, love and service, family. I'm feeling absolutely fantastic, man. And I got to be honest with you, brother. The way you just opened that thing up, it made me feel even better. It made me remember why it is that we strive to practice these six steps, you know what I mean, in our everyday process of life. And so with that being said and without, you know, going too deeply into what it is that you know, my day has been, and I definitely wanted to go ahead, like you said, and get into this process. And so with that being said, tonight we are speaking about the curse of selfishness. Our selfishness has become something in many of our lives that has crippled us, that has hindered us from being able to see people, places, and things from an attitude of gratitude. And one of the things that I have found most, you know, endearing in gaining knowledge is, you know, going on the path that I went through drug addiction. Many times, and I don't like to speak on this too deeply, but many times people who go into the rooms of recovery from different diseases of addiction or from different issues mentally, emotionally, socially, psychologically, you know, all of these things are contributing factors of what is being understood as our problem. And in that sense, many have found that the curse of selfishness not only crippled them, their legs altogether. And in my personal experience, I had to look at this situation because when I began to recover my life, when I began to recover my mind, when I began to reclaim my spirit and my soul force, one of the things that had become mandated for me to see is the fact that I was my own problem. That I had caused much of the hurt, harm, and the danger that had been brought about in my life. And until I could become honest with myself and see that my best thinking still made my life unmanageable, then I would never be able to get into the solution. And seeing that my life was that unmanageable that I began to become chaotic and become a nuisance, not only to my community, but also my family, and not only my family, but also myself. And so this is something that I had to look at. This is something that I had to remember. And this is something that I had to begin to teach myself on a daily basis. Today, you know, family, I strive to look at over and over. Peace and blessings. Brother Young, can you come in for a second, brother? Give us your take on selfishness as a problem.
Most definitely, brother, most definitely. I'd love to. So, selfishness. I'll give you an example. Let's start at the very beginning. You know, when I don't have a license right now, but I see this all the time when I'm sitting in the back seat of my Uber or my Lyft, or whenever I'm in the front seat with somebody who's driving me around, whatever the case may be. And I see people and how they interact on the road. And let's just start with that concept right there. How many people do you see that cut you off? How does that make you feel? Whenever I look at my drivers, they're pretty pissed off, to be honest. They're actually completely ticked off half the time. So I was watching this one situation a couple weeks ago, and this one guy, I'm sitting in the back of my Lyft, and we're in traffic, right? And there's a whole bunch of cars, and this one individual wants to get all the way across four lanes so he could take a quick left instead of going all the way around. So this individual cuts every single car off in that line, and he's looking at them like, I don't know any other way. I need this. I want to do this. This is like, can you guys just please let me through? Please let me through. Please let me through. Please let me through. And he's causing traffic to be extended because some people want to let him through. Some people don't want to let him through. And he's not considerate of any of those people's feelings. He's worried about how he's going to get to point A, from point A to point B. Now let's look at this in retrospect. This same individual that just cut off all those people in traffic was selfish, self-centered. He thought about only himself in that moment in time. And in that situation, he cursed himself and he cursed everybody around him. Cursing himself in this aspect, what if he had got into an accident? What would have led to that? What if someone had hit him by accident? What if someone was dumb enough to hop out of the car and try to argue with him? What if he caused that type of situation? You know, just so many different things could have arisen from that one little situation where he wants to cut off everybody else. Now let's look at the flip side of the coin. All the people that he had affected that maybe have gotten angry because they got somewhere to be. They got, maybe it's an emergency and they're trying to be cool in traffic. Their family members are hurt, or they have to get to their children because they're out of school and they want to make sure nothing happens. Or they're just in a hurry to get to work and you're causing them to be late because you're causing a traffic jam or you're causing an accident that's going to delay them even more. So what have you done? You've caused a divide between people's lives, and for what? Because you are too lazy to go a few blocks around and, you know, go around in timely fashion because it may take you 5 extra minutes. So you're being selfish and inconsiderate of how someone else feels in that instance. That in itself is what's causing a divide within our people. So let's look at the individual who's walking down the street who has no care whatsoever for anybody in the street. There's homeless people. Does he care? Probably not. Okay, so that's kind of selfish, isn't it? There's the person that is suffering in a general sense. So I come to you and I tell you, hey, you know, I'm going through some things. I don't know what to do right now. And you're like, man, I don't got time for this. This is annoying. I can't deal with this. You're being selfish right now because that person's coming to you as a brother or a sister and asking for your help, but you're pushing them off because it's not part of your agenda. That's a curse in itself. You're cursing yourself because what do they say? You reap what you sow. So if you reaped the situation of you basically telling someone to go to hell, what if you're in that same situation one day and you need that help, and then what? So you just basically told people to go to hell. You didn't help nobody. And in the end of the day, what if when you need it, nobody turns to you? Almost like the boy who cried wolf. I'm sure we all heard that story. Or what about when the market crashed in 2009 and people were going into foreclosure? People were losing their jobs. People were losing their lives. You know, we got millionaires who have $1,000 in their accounts. But how many people did they hurt along the way to become a millionaire that possibly those same people that they hurt could have helped them had they not screwed them over? You're cursing yourself. Start looking at the way we treat people, or our people in the general sense, because that's imperative to our success as people. You know, we're creating this curse of selfishness because we're looking at just things from our own standpoint and not trying to see it from the other person's point of view. You know, just in a general sense, let's say, you know, the person who's a compulsive gambler, how is that affecting his family? He has an addiction to gambling. He has an addiction to drugs, whatever it may be. that he's being selfish or she's being selfish at that moment when they're trying to fulfill their petty desires over the sake of their family. I just gambled away all my money. I just smoked away all my money. I can't go feed those children. You're cursing those children before they even had an opportunity to make a decision for themselves. You're cursing your family. You love yourself so much, you don't care what happens to anybody else. And that's an unfortunate situation because I'm from Chicago. I know those West Side dopes houses. I've seen them. I've seen lines around the corner. I used to be the dope dealer. And I know what it does to people. I've watched their lives falling apart, and I took pride in the fact that I was trying to make a quick buck and this person was suffering and I didn't care. That was selfish. Today I work a full-time job and I'm taking care of myself, but at the same time, now that I've learned about the way I have to treat people, and in all actuality, I'm actually reciprocating 10 times more to other people to help them in their struggles. Whether it's physical, financial, emotional, spiritual, whatever it is, I'm there for those brothers and sisters that I have in my life that I can call a brother or sister. And they know they can rely on me. But back in the day, maybe a phone call, I'd be like, yo, homie, sis, I can't help you. I got stuff to do. I got dope run to do right now. You're interfering with money. Money don't know. These hypes ain't going to wait. I need the money now. That was selfish. I was inconsiderate of those individuals and what they needed, what they wanted. The scriptures say that, that in the Bible itself, if you believe in that, righteousness requires to be selfless, but selfish enough out of love. It's that love within us that creates that selfless love, but it's selfish at the same time because it makes us feel good to reciprocate, to give, to want to give, for people's lives to continue to grow. If we knew better, we would do better. So when we know better that we shouldn't just walk by a person that's homeless, I give a buck all the time. I remember there was a hurricane coming. I live in Tampa now. There was a hurricane on the way, and there was this guy standing on a corner. I'm looking around like, dude, homie, where are you just standing here on the corner for? So I pulled the window down and I asked him. He's like, man, shelters are full. I ain't got nowhere to go. I just want a buck, man. I'm like, everything's closed. I'm like, do you got any water? Gave the brother some water and $5. That's all I had on me at the time. At least something to, make him feel better about himself at that moment. He's like, I know the brother's about to struggle. His other guy is under the bridge, and they're trying to hide out from the rain that's about to be going down. Imagine if they got hurt. I wish I could do more for the man, but at the same time, I was with other people, and I can't just invite him into my home. It's not my home. What if I had my own house? What if I was able to provide them shelter during the time of their need? But at the same time, unless I'm doing better in my life and I'm selfish a little bit to assist myself to be in that situation, I can't help nobody. One of the greatest lessons that I learned in my life at this point in time is that you have to be selfish to be selfless. It's one of the hardest things to understand, that I have to, for a short period of time, be so selfish to get my life together in a way that's conducive to my community, that until it's in that situation, I can't reciprocate in the manner that I want to. And that's not fair. That's not how it's supposed to go down. Now, I do have a systematic understanding and approach to this. I'm going to give a little bit of a psychological aspect to it, which is, I know it's going to help some people's understanding of what, selfishness and self-centeredness is. So in the meantime, I'm going to quickly put on a track. We're going to have a real quick halftime. And once we come back, I'll go into it. And we'll just take it all one step at a time. Peace and blessings.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general, I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed, because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex. All they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex. Military, the monetary. Military, the monetary. Military, the monetary. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary. We're marching behind the commander-in-chief who was standing under a spotlight shaking like a leaf. But the ship of state had landed on an economic reef, so we knew he was going to bring us messages of grief. The military and the monetary were shielded by January and were storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard the sumbitch. Now, all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitary. They took the secrets from the secretary. But they left the bitch an obituary. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries. Tried to make so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, kept us all wondering if all of this was really truly necessary. We've got to work for peace.
And indeed it is necessary. Thank you very much. I just wanted to listen to that real quick, Work for Peace by Gil Scott-Heron. He always hits it home. I always love what he has to say on that one track, The Military and the Monetary, the way he breaks it down. It goes even deeper than that. If you want to check it out, it's called, like I said, Work for Peace by Gil Scott-Heron. It's about 7 minutes long, so that's why I cut it off a little bit early. I just want to send that clip in there. But as we're going to continue to talk about the, you know, breaking the curse of selfishness, of self-centeredness, before I get too deep into it, I would love to bring my brother Hess, our brother Hess, back. And, you know, break down his perspective of it real quick before I bring the scientific, psychological aspect down myself. Brother Hest, you with us?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Peace and blessings. Thank you so much, beloved brother, man, for playing that, because Brother Gil Scott-Heron, man, he has a method and a way of breaking down what he says in such a terminology to make you feel kind of like, you know, hip. To be able to conceptualize certain thoughts and aspects of life that most of us from poverty-stricken America would care nothing about. And, you know, big salutes to our elder. With that being said, family, most definitely tonight we're speaking on selfishness. And as Brother Jan has broken down for us, why is this a complicated disease? Why is selfishness so sickening? How did we become selfish? And when I thought on this, I had to utilize some of the more religious aspects of teaching when it came to realizing that my easiest way of bringing this into my understanding is that old teaching that says we were born into sin. We were born into the nature of evil. We're born into a world that is worldly. And in such a sick place, the only thing that I care about is me, myself, and I. Some people call it the ism. I, self, and me. And such forms of selfishness has, for me, taken me down a road of self-will. Self-will run riot. I'm doing things with my willpower, which we call the thinking power, and I'm using my thinking power for nothing but what it is that my flesh craves for. that my mind craves for based on what it sees inside of a worldly context. And so going on that route, I was quickly able to start stealing by the age of 5. I didn't care who I stole from. I stole out of the purse. If I could steal something in the church out the pot, I'd steal it out the pot. If I could steal something out the store, I sure will drop a few of those bubble gums and maybe even get lucky and get a piece of chocolate. Slip it right on into my pocket, and if I thought it would be bulging too much, then I'd slip it into my pants. And these forms of selfishness grew into my adolescent stages when I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it, and I didn't care who got hurt, who lost something, who was taken advantage of in my pursuit for that in which I craved. These cravings went on into my adulthood and wanting to gain power and wanting to obtain a level of respect that was brought on and induced by fear in the hearts of my fellows. And so I did things in order to make a name, and I drove selfishly to get people to be afraid of me in order to lift myself up. I often thought about the painful stages of life and the stages of development coming up as an adolescent in the ghettos. And I utilized this as an excuse to be selfish in medicating my pain through drugs and alcoholism. Even in my relationships, I wanted my girlfriend to be faithful, but it was okay for me to holler when I seen a little shouty. As I look back now at the curse that I placed upon myself with this selfishness, with being centered upon myself and what I wanted from a worldly perspective without the care or concern of anybody else, when I look back on this, I see how I placed myself up under a spell that was so binding that it almost killed me. Or I almost killed me, as we spoke about earlier on in the show. Because I was my worst enemy. I made that choice to remain centered and focused upon self and what the flesh desired until I cared nothing for others. And I think that this is a good classification when it concerns what many of our prisoners in this society's Department of Corrections across America, they often define the criminal or the convicted felon or convicted individual who is going into those prison systems. They classify them with a diagnosis of being antisocial behavioral disorder. That antisocial behavior disorder is a mainframe, and a mainframe that is centered around giving them exactly what it is that our society needs to let us know that it's okay to lock them up and never let them out if so need be. That is what we're learning. That is what I have seen in my life. And so as I continue to, understand more about myself, this selfishness has crippled me. But now Brother Yan is going to show us how this same selfishness can lead to one's liberation. So I pass this.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Okay. Let's start at the very beginning. I love that phrase. Let's start at the very beginning. I say that all the time to people, especially my clients. So I'm like, okay. This is where we're at. I'll start at the very beginning. Now, I'm going to first start by defining selfishness. There's two definitions. One is seeking pleasure or satisfaction. The second definition is what you seek for pleasure and satisfaction in desire versus abject of pleasure. So the Oxford definition references number two, whether you seek pleasure-wise. So excessively concerned with your own self-interest, also lacking consideration for other people, concerned mainly with one's own personal profit or pleasure. Very similar in definitions. Now, definition two, which is how do you seek it, is in accord with common usage, such as a mother telling the child, share the cookies with your brother. Now, we're assuming the child is understanding the concept of selfishness. That child doesn't understand that they're being selfish because it hasn't been educated. We as people are sometimes not educated on our behavior, as I suggested with the driver trying to cut off all of the traffic. You know, our children have to be taught. Some of our elders need to be retaught on how to be considerate of others because they've never learned those life managing skills. So it is very important to define the difference between the two. You know, so in definition one, which is definition of seeking pleasure or satisfaction, we're basically leading to the serial killer and the saint being equally as selfish. Whereas in number two, what you seek as pleasure and satisfaction doesn't give those absurd consequences. How do you relate the saint and the killer to be equally selfish? You know what I mean? It's basically you're saying it's like the saint is seeking to pleasure or satisfy their soul. You know, God had given them a mission, and the saint is on the path of righteousness to heal the people that are around them. So they're seeking pleasure or satisfaction to themselves by altruistically living a life that's conducive to their community. Whereas the serial killer is doing the same thing. He has pleasure and seeking satisfaction for himself. And that's about the extent of that relationship. So understanding the difference between the two is what we cause the divide of the serial killer and the saint. Whereas in number one, they don't do that. The second definition, what do we seek as far as it, is consistent with what many intelligent people in history have believed. So, historians for example, the Buddha believes we should release a selfish desiring called tanda. We need to release that into the world, the selfish desire for love, the selfish desire for your happiness, the selfish desire for my own happiness so it can transcend into your life in some way, shape, or form. So understand that selfishness can be used in a proper context. It's how you're utilizing it is the most important way. Now, excuse me one second. My cat, Blaze, is striving to interrupt me right here. He's about to break my computer. Blaze, back up. Aristotle believed people could be too selfish or not selfish enough. A flourishing life is a means between the two. Like I was saying, Aristotle is basically saying that people could be too selfish. Too selfish is the person trying to cut traffic off. Not selfish enough is the person that's giving too much to everybody else and not helping themselves, kind of like what I was speaking as far as myself. It was something that I had to learn. You know, I couldn't give to people in the context that I wanted to give them until I was selfish enough with myself so I can be selfless at a later time. But sometimes people are so selfish that they never grow past it. And that's now becoming a curse. That's now an inconsideration of other people other than yourself. Now you're cursing yourself and the people that are surrounded by you. Jesus said, love your neighbor or as yourself. Don't just love yourself. What does that mean to you? Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, if I love my neighbor, my brother or my sister in my neighborhood as I love myself, then that means I would want what's best for them as myself. So if I love that individual, as Jesus said, would I give them dope? Would I allow them to, you know, ruin their family by gambling their life away? Or would I allow them to hurt themselves by, you know, not learning life managing skills that they have not learned? Wouldn't I want them to be in the same position I am if I am successful? But first, I have to be successful. I have to have a burden of evidence before I can convince somebody that I am capable of giving the advice or the strategies that are necessary. Now, you know, Pop's program is very intelligently created through our six steps, but that responsibility factor of self is required. So you have to be so selfish of yourself to take on that personal responsibility that you could take on another person's responsibility thereafter because your home is already built. It's like, you know, if I build a house out of straw and the wind blows, it's going to fall down. But if I build a house out of brick and the wind blows, it's going to sustain it. Well, our communities, a lot of times we build houses that are built upon straw and not the brick that we, you know, that is necessary. That is not necessary, okay? Now, definition one, which is the seeking, whether it's a sinner and a saint, is untestable and unfalsifiable. You can't test whether a person's the sinner and the saint or the serial killer. There's no way to test it. It's based on a body of work, which is why definition two, which is seeking it, is you can test it by their actions. It's created by the thought through the ego. You can prove altruism this way and with intention. You know, you can prove it, which is why I say definition one, and that, just in case you missed it, the definitions of selfishness, seeking pleasure or satisfaction, opposed to what you seek in the pleasure of satisfaction. You know what I mean? So we can test it. We can prove it. You know, social scientists testing psychological egoism use this definition in number two as testable as test subjects because it is testable and it is unfalsifiable. Now, Batson, who's a leading scientist, defines egoism as the motivational state with the ultimate goal of increasing one's own welfare. He also defines altruism, which is what we strive to be here at POPs, as the motivational state with the ultimate goal of increasing another's welfare. So through my selfishness of self-seeking, you know, gratification, I'm actually in all actuality striving to live an altruistic life, which is somewhat selfish, but also at the same time selfless. Now that scientific research distinguishes between my pleasure and the object of my pleasures, like in definition two, I can then continue to understand the reason why they do what they do. Because I can test it. I can theorize it. I can understand the psychological battle that the person is coming to. To summarize, that all the desires and the motives are from you does not make you selfish, nor does the possibility that you're always seeking pleasure or satisfaction makes your motive selfish. Rather, it's the object of your desires that make them selfish or altruistic. You know, therefore, scientists can only test egoism through the actual second definition, which is how you seek pleasure or satisfaction, is in desire of abject pleasure. So, you know, a question could be is, if all motives are caused by natural selection, let's just say, you know, we're naturally created to be selfish, self-preservation. Are all motives selfish since they arise from the desire to survive? We've got to look at it from that context. The tiger is selfish in the fact that it has to kill to survive. We as humans do not need to kill to survive. There is no proof or reason that natural selection could not give rise to empathy, cooperation, altruistic motivation, as Brother Hesse has stated, free will. We as humans have to develop an understanding, a psychological understanding of selfishness, so we can portray it into our every single day life, which is where altruism is so important. You know, until we understand the psychological battles that we're having, we can't fix this curse. We can't break it. All we're doing at this point is acknowledging it. Now we need the tools in our little toolbox to build that brick house, to build this structure up from the bottom to the top, so that way it doesn't sway back and forth as the wind blows, as our lives are, you know, go through chaos. Most people just don't understand that. Most people don't care about what happens to others as long as it doesn't happen to them. That's not love. No, that's not love. Love with pure disinterested heart. That's what it basically becomes. We sense that. That's automatically phony, fake. It's a facade. You know what I mean? What if I told you I love you so much I can eat you? That sounds okay. You know what I mean? People are more receptive to their own understanding of selfishness, to their own understanding of love, to their own understanding of things.
No, I don't think he wants you to eat us, brother.
That's what you're going to hit me with? Hey, but you've obviously heard that expression before. So it's like, man, the point I'm trying to make, bro, is like until we acknowledge this understanding and there's a baseline psychological aspect of it, we're not going to break this curse. You know what I mean? We have to understand how to be altruistic. We have to understand how to be real and how to use our selfishness to make our other people's selfishness go away. We have to be that example. And maybe I said too much. Maybe I broke it down a little too, out there. I don't know. What you think about what I said, bro? Tell me I wish someone would come in, press one, and come talk to us about this. But, our audience seems like they enjoy listening more than speaking as of tonight. So what do you think, bro?
I definitely want to encourage our listening audience to come in and say something. What is selfishness to you? And how has that selfishness created a lifestyle habit that crippled you? And now that you have brought what you just brought, Brother John, while we're waiting on someone to come in, it reminded me of what my mentor told me. And I know I'm always talking about what my mentor said. Well, I'm going to do it again tonight. Okay, so this is what my mentor shared with me. He said, dig the move, Brother Hess. You got to realize that if you're going to be in my program of life, you got to realize that this is a selfish program. And I'm like, a selfish program? Hold on now. I just got through reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and going through that recovery, and that recovery was saying that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our troubles. Now you're telling me to be a part of your program, I have to always remember that it's a selfish program. And I didn't understand it. Was it an oxymoron? Was it a change and a shift in what it is that my higher power needed me to understand? I fought with these thoughts. And then after a few weeks in his program and listening, studying, looking up words and indulging deeper into psychology and, the processes of the criminal mind, the addictive mind, and things of that nature, it's like I began to see what he said. He said, it's a selfish program, Brother Hess, meaning that you got to want this. You got to want this way of life so bad that you have to be willing to push many things aside. You have to push these things aside, and you have to push these things away from you. He said, your relationship with your old lady, push it away. And I'm like, what you mean? It's my lady. He said, man, you were sick in that relationship, and you was making her sick. Take some time to get yourself well spiritually. He said, when I say this is a selfish program, I'm saying that you have to be selfish in the sense that you got to focus on your spirit. You got to get your spirit strong. And until you get your spirit strong, you ain't got time to be trying to add nothing else to anyone else's spirit, because you're not spiritually fit yet. He said, I told you, you got to be selfish. And if you ain't willing to build this up for yourself, family, you ain't got nothing to give nobody else. And you got to make a choice. Do you want to be where you're at right now, or do you want to be valuable to every person that you come across, even if it means to remove yourself from their habitat? And I had to make that decision, family, and I made it. And in the sense that he was speaking on selfishness, I had to become selfish. And so I told my old lady, baby, give me, 3 months. I need 3 to 6 months to get myself a program of action, a program of life, a program of dedication that's truly built on love. But until I learn how to love me, I can't love you, sweetheart. And after I had got better, after 6 to 12 months of going through this mentor's program, I saw that me and this sister wasn't even supposed to be together anyway, because she was sick too. And that's why we was in a relationship together at that time. We was both sick. But she seemed better because she could hold down a job. I seemed sicker because I had a drug addiction. But in the end, she was just as sick as I was, but she was able to mask it better. Because when I became spiritually endowed and capable of maintaining a level of loving myself, on that spiritual plane, I began to see where her selfishness was coming out. And she wanted me for her own means of feeling puffed up,
big-headed around the community. She wanted me for her own sense of being able to seek and have pleasure in certain ways and areas in life. But when it came down to my needs and desires spiritually, to keep it on point, to keep it focused, to keep it centered in, she was not willing to give up certain things that she wanted in order for allowance of me maintaining and obtaining even more of a spiritual lifestyle and happiness. So, you know, it's that pursuit of happiness, love, and spirituality that definitely gave me, you know, all I wanted and desired. And so with that being said, I don't want to get too long. If somebody want to come in, man, y'all please press 1. Chime on in. Tell us about your selfishness from the spiritual context as well as from where it has cursed your life. You know, and that's the big difference. You got selfishness on the spiritual level, meaning that you have to acquire what it is that you need to be able to provide for others. You got to get it for yourself first. And you got to remove everything from around you. You can't care about nothing and nobody but yourself until you get this spirit alive, strong, and able to go into the world and be able to resist the temptations, to be able to obtain what it is that you need as far as self-discipline without spending your money. You're able to invest it. You're able to incorporate your life, like Brother Yon said, in the lives of others who need someone to form a bond with them. Listen to them. And so, family, this is the things that we're speaking on tonight, and I definitely want to encourage you to get involved with this conversation, even if you get the dialogue going in your own community, with your own family, with your own friends. But I pass the mic on back over. I say peace and blessings, love and service, brother.
Appreciate that, brother. And, you know, you just basically reiterated what I was striving to say. We're down to our last 5 minutes. I guess we'll, you know, close it up as we go along here. Doesn't seem like anybody wants to come in and speak, which is perfectly fine. You know, this is the point of breaking Thursday night, breaking the curse. It's an educational platform. We're more than happy to sit here and teach. And hopefully you've taken notes. Hopefully you've learned something. Hopefully, you know, we got you to think. That's the goal of all this, is to get you to think. You know, it's like there's an elderly brother by the name of Curtis Wise. He always says, if I could get you to think, I could get you to save yourself. And that's always kind of hit home to me as far as the way I perceive reality. You know, it's when I was not thinking. It's when I was not acknowledging that there's a, you know, a good and a bad side to everything. It's when I was just living and not thinking is when I was lost. It's when I woke up and decided, you know what, it's time to actually think for myself, not allow the TV or people or situations to influence the way I see reality. It's the, you know, understanding that I have to be selfish for a little while to save myself so I can go save someone else. Because now I'm in a position where I can offer that help. But if I'm giving my last, every single time I turn around, I'm giving my last because I'm trying to save someone else. And in the end of the day, when I need that same help and ain't nobody there because they're too selfish to assist me the way I need to be assisted, who helped who? Who cursed who? You know, and that's the misunderstanding we have of selfishness. Sometimes you have to be a little bit, because you have to love yourself so much that you will not put yourself in that situation. But on the flip side of the coin, you love yourself so much that you want to love someone else the same way, so you give them everything that you can. And that's the flip side. You know, that's like Jesus said, the good and the bad side of it. You have to love your neighbor as you love yourself. You can't just love yourself, because that's what creates a community. That's what creates that unity within our community. Once we have developed a bond with ourselves first, I have to be that selfish that bond with myself has to be developed first, and it has to have structure and strength and, you know, a purpose. So that way, in the flip side of things, I can reciprocate it to the people who don't have it, and I could show them through my walk of life how I did it and how we can do it together. That's how you break that curse of selfishness. You gain an understanding of what it means and how to promote it in an appropriate context. So that same individual that wants to cut off all traffic to get to point A to point B because it satisfies their personal life and their goal, and they don't want to hear about what anybody else has to say, I have to do this, they may just go around and save the people that are around them from feeling some type of way towards them. So we've got about 2 minutes left, Brother Hest. Closing comments, any concerns? You want to, you know, name any other shows that we got coming up, the Peace Summit, GoFundMe, whatever it may be, close it up, please, and then we'll go with another song, and I wish everybody, you know, happy good night.
Peace and blessings, love and service, man, most definitely, brother. Just want to continue to thank you, man, and thank all of our listening audience for tuning in with us here tonight. You know, one of the most valuable aspects that I would definitely like to leave with the listening audience is I want to leave this aspect, the selfishness. Selfishness is bad when you want what you want so bad and you got to have it right then and there that you don't care who you hurt, even yourself. Even yourself. Sometimes we want things in life so bad that we will cripple ourselves from being able to save our money and invest our money, from saving our spirit and investing in our spirit, from saving our family and investing in our family. We are so selfish and so self-centered that we care nothing for the longevity of what we've been given, which is the gift of life right here in the present. And we want to ball. We want to look big. We want to seem so strong, so having it all figured out, so classy, that we will give up what is supposed to be most precious in life. And this is the opportunity that I'm speaking on tonight when it concerns selfishness and self-centeredness. And so I just think that we should look at this, family, because the tool that we need to, you know, to really truly bring our understanding under a lock and key is the ability to say, you know what? I refuse to do this to me, to my family, to my community, to everyone. And I'm going to be an example. An example of love means that it's not about me. So when I get this money, I can't just go and buy beautiful shoes, and I can't just go and splurge on these diamonds, and I can't just ride around in this big boy truck to think about more than just myself. And I got to see what it is I was given life to do. Do I even know my calling in life while I'm striving to portray an image that other people like, that other people want to live up to? And if I have found my calling in life, am I investing in that calling and for others to receive that calling rather than trying to look big and hard and tough and powerful and cool and all of that stuff there? And so, you know, family, man, it's time for us to begin to break this curse by doing what it is that we need to do to get these tools that motivate us, that inspire us when nobody else is willing to. Are you your biggest fan? Are you cheering you on for the righteous spirit when nobody else is in the stands? Can you do that? And if you can't, then that means that your spirit needs to be stronger, and that means that there are certain things that have to be given up, sacrificed, done away with in order to reincorporate something that will give you exactly what you need to break this curse. I love y'all very much, man. Thank you so much, Brother Yon, man. It's been beautiful, brother. Peace and blessings, love and service.
Thank you as well, my brother, and thank you to everybody who came in and listened. We look forward to seeing you same time, same place, same channel. There's a night breaking a curse. It's just all of us, just two of us.
Yeah, what's this place?
This is a soundstage.
Can you go down there? Now, Dad, this is a very sensitive subject.
The first time the
doctor placed you in my arms. I knew I'd meet death before I let you meet harm. Although questions arose in my mind, would I be man enough against wrong, choose right and be standing up? From the hospital that first night, took an hour just to get the car seat in right. People driving off fast got me kind of upset. Got you home safe, placed you in your bassinet. That night I don't think one wink I slept, as I slipped out my bed to your crib I crept. Touched your head gently, felt my heart melt, cause I knew I loved you more than life itself. Into my knees, and I begged the Lord, please let me be your good daddy. All he needs, love, knowledge, discipline too, I pledge my life to you. So every time I look at you, I think, man, a little me just like me. Wait and see, gonna be tall, makes me laugh, cause you got your dad's ears and all. Sometimes I wonder what you gonna be, a general, a doctor, maybe a MC. I wanna kiss you all the time, but I will test that butt when you cut out a line. True that, why you do that? I try to be a tough dad, but you be making me laugh. Crazy joy when I see the eyes of my baby boy. I pledge to you, I will always do everything I can, show you how to be a man. Dignity, integrity, honor, and I don't mind if you lose, long as you came with it. And you can cry, ain't no shame in it. It didn't work out with me and your mom, but yo, push come to shove, you was conceived in love. So if the world attacks and you slide off track, remember one fact, I got your back.
Just a two of us, we can make it if we try.
Just me and you, just me and you. Time job to be a good dad. You got so much more stuff than I had. I gotta study just to keep with the changing times. 101 Dalmatians on your CD-ROM. CD, I'm trying to pretend I know on my PC where that CD go. But yo, ain't nothing promised. One day I'll be gone. Feel the strife, but trust life does go on. But just in case, it's my place to impart. One day some girl's gonna break your heart. And ooh, ain't no pain like from the opposite sex. Gonna hurt bad, but don't take it out on the next. Son, throughout life people will make you mad, disrespect you and treat you bad. Let God deal with the things they do, cause hate in your heart will consume you too. Always tell the truth, say your prayers, hold doors, pull out chairs, easy on the swears. You're living proof that dreams come true. I love you and I'm here for you.
Just the two of us, we can make it if we try.
Just me and you, just me and you.
True that,
true that.